Welcome to Culture Unfit. My name is Nikia Riviak, and if you've ever felt constrained by culture's expectations of who you should be, what you should do, or what constitutes good, bad, or ugly while showing up in the workplace, then this podcast is for you. Welcome, my beautiful misfits.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Culture Unfit. Today, we welcome another beautiful misfit and listen to their story. I'm pleased to usher you into a very fun, intimate conversation between Clara Broomfield and myself. Now, Clara is a writer, a creator, and learning development professional who spent her career in tech doing everything from curating content to building a learning and development program from the ground up. Interestingly, I had the pleasure of meeting Clara through her tweets back when I worked at Twitter. She's hilarious, she is pointed, she has a point of view, and I'm really excited for you all to listen into her story and her journey as someone navigating the workplace, trying to figure out how to fit in, and perhaps not always fit in, but leverage her authentic self to move ahead. So without further ado, let's listen to our conversation.
And here we go. All right. Finally, Clara, I'm so happy to have you on this episode of Culture Unfit. And as somebody who's been a long admirer of your tweets, this is a chance to get to know you, the person behind the tweets, and also hear a little bit about your story and how you have navigated life, work, career stuff, being somebody who's unapologetically, you know, in their own skin. So why don't we start off with you sharing a little bit about yourself and if we were to have met you as a teenager, as a kid, what were you like? Who would we have found?
Oh, that's a question. I don't think you would have liked me as a kid or a teenager. That's the truth of it. I definitely think I still had the ability to be loud with my words. I just had no grounding in who I was or why I was saying it. And so I had no sense of like, this is who I am, and I stand behind what I'm saying. I think I had a tendency to just say something that would get the people going, as we say. And so I think really for me, coming into adulthood, coming into myself in a lot of ways, has been about like, okay, I clearly have this ability to like verbally take down whoever I want. Let's figure out how to channel that so that it's used in a way that I can actually stand by in 10 years if someone were to pull up my tweets, you know? So that's probably what I would say about that. A little about me. I am unemployed. No, I don't know. I've had this kind of really broad experience in tech, but I'm also a writer in a lot of genres, including screenwriting. I dabble in the social media kind of content space as well. That's a little about me.
Now, you know, I'm fascinated by humans. Part of the reason why perhaps I'm still in this field of research is because we are endlessly perplexing. And one of the things that I have been really intrigued by, maybe because I'm a mother and, you know, I'm watching parents and the parents of friends age, is the fact that we grow old, right? We grow up, but we don't necessarily ever lose the things that we faced as kids. And so the question that I have here is, other than growing older and perhaps gaining more experiences in a few adulting areas, what have been some of the most significant and impactful changes you've gone through in becoming the person you are today? And you talked a little bit about this, right? That like, you know, like learning how to sort of use that the power of the word differently, whereas when you were younger, you might have not kind of had the awareness of the impact, but you speaking was not a problem. But yeah, talk to us a little bit about what has changed most significantly for you.
That's a good question. I think for me, probably the most substantial change really has happened just in the last year. A lot, I think once your brain really hits, like, it's finished developing the frontal lobe, you really start to notice the changes. Like, that's no joke. But just even in the last year, I've noticed, I feel like I'm much more comfortable being connected to other people. And maybe that comes in the form of, like, learning how to ask for help and need and rely on other people and not necessarily have to live this very, like, hyper independent life where I have to do everything myself all the time, which stems from just like a necessity of childhood and how I grew up. It really was just like me raising myself in a lot of capacities. But like, you know, that's probably the most significant change for me is like learning, okay, there's life beyond that. And now I find myself like with this rich kind of group of friends and, you know, people on social media that I'm engaging with and just kind of like this newfound ability to like connect with people in, I think, much more a human way, in a way that feels more true to me. And maybe in the past when I tried to have friends or other relationships, I don't think I was actually showing up fully in those. And it felt more like a performance, where now it feels more like a lived experience. Is that too heavy for like this early?
No, it is so rich and so powerful, because what you're describing is so human. Ultimately, we are social creatures who crave connection. And it's been interesting to be somewhere in the US that is very individualistic. And, you know, I think we as a society value individualism and independence. You're 18, go out and do a thing. But at the end of the day, it is what we crave, being with other people, feeling like we belong. And we don't always get it in all of the spaces, particularly in places of work, where it's not just you trying to figure out how to do your job, but also, am I like fitting in with this group of people who, you know, we share no lived experiences? You know, is this culture that I've sort of found myself in some place that I fit in? It's the very nature of the conversation I want to have with you today. So that depth is right on. So let's stick with it. So I'm going off script a little bit here because I want to go deeper. When you think about your group of friends and then you think about work and work experiences that you've had, have you found that sense of community and connection, camaraderie, all the C's in previous work experiences? Or has that independence that seems to be core to who you are, because you just said, I essentially raised myself, prevailed in your work experiences?
That's a tough question, because I would say no. I've never worked somewhere where I really felt like I belonged. I've definitely worked with people I've liked. I've been able to function in those workspaces. But I also think I've always worked somewhere that at the end of the day had an incredibly toxic work culture, which just kind of prohibited that kind of that sense of belonging and community. And I think especially in my last job, the longer I was there, the less I felt like I fit there. And that was one of the driving forces that really prompted me to leave that job. Pretty like, I mean, I gave them plenty of notice. I was like, this is, you know, where we're at. And there, we just were never able to come together and find a resolution. And I left. But that was one of the driving forces. And it got so much worse when I got a new manager who didn't see me at all, didn't get me at all, and had no awareness of herself and how she was coming into spaces. And I was like, okay, life is too short for this. And I think for me, that's one of the things I'm like, I need to find this in my next role. Like, it's time. I've had enough of these jobs where I'm just kind of like, always feeling like I'm on thin ice. Even if I'm able to kind of laugh and have jokes with these people, it's always like usually on the basis of shared trauma in the workplace that we're bonding, right? So yeah, no, I don't think I found that yet. And I would like to find that.
Wouldn't we all? Trauma bonding, by the way, whole other topic. We should get into it at some point, maybe episode 5. But going back to something you just described, it sounds like the relationship with this former manager was a painful experience. And, you know, there's so many people that I've encountered that are trying to disentangle what feels like workplace fit or lack thereof from like managerial toxicity. And sometimes they get conflated. Sometimes they're kind of one and the same. Like, you know, the manager is a product of a toxic work environment and therefore have become, you know, toxic themselves. But in that experience, how did you know when it wasn't about you anymore that the problem actually was something else? Because that's the other thing. Sometimes we're like, maybe I do need this feedback and need to grow. And you need to figure out whether you're crazy or you're not crazy. You know, whether it's like, you know, absolutely their problem or you deserve a bit of feedback. So help us understand how you were able to disentangle that it was a managerial problem or opportunity.
I literally looked at my other coworkers who I had worked with for a long time, whereas this manager was pretty new to the company. And she was the third direct manager I had had in like 12 months, just because this company had gone through so many changes. And so I knew my job really well, and she knew nothing because she was coming in completely new to the company. And I found that everyone who was working at my level at the time, there were three of us, we had worked together for a while. We were all having the same feelings about working with her, as well as one person who was kind of a level above us. And I didn't report to him directly, but the other two people did. And we were saying, listen, we are not able to be productive in these meetings. And we found ourselves literally having to reschedule meetings without her. We'd hang up on a call with her and then redo the meeting without her to actually get work done. And it became very clear. It's like, okay, clearly there are problems that have nothing to do with me, but because of my personality type and the fact that I am very observational, I think often I would have to be the person to say, let's pin this for now. Let's focus on this topic just to try to get some sort of productivity out of the meeting. And I think she always took that as a personal affront. But the more conversations I had with other people on the team, I started to see it as a pattern of people's interactions with her. So I knew it wasn't something that I was doing. I also knew I wasn't behaving in a way that I wouldn't behave with everyone else on the team, that I hadn't consistently already been behaving, and that I didn't stand behind. You know, because sometimes when you're on a call, you're like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. And you know it, and you can course correct. But that's never the feeling I had when I left there. I felt like we were constantly talking like normal. But then she would come back with some wild complaint about tone. This was her thing. She constantly would police my tone. And she would talk to me like I was in preschool. And she's like, do not take that tone with me. Those kinds of sentiments. Yeah, this is like a grown adult talking to another grown adult. And what I started to realize, and I even tried to have the conversation with her, I was like, I'm just telling you a fact. The fact is, you know, we need this amount of time to complete something. But she would get offended if I said that as a matter of fact statement. And I was like, I don't know how else to tell you that it takes 3 days to do something and you not get offended by that statement. Because that's just a fact. And so that's how I was like, okay, there's not really any winning with this. We tried to like have conversations with her. One of the people who was like part of trying to fix the problem actually ended up getting fired. After we went to HR and said, hey, we're all having the same issue. Can we try to give some feedback here? Because none of us really feel like we can talk to her directly about this. And then one of those people ended up getting fired. And then the team got thrown into this huge restructure. She did a bit of a power grab within the team from like my viewpoint, and then like pretty quickly isolated me out of everything, started leaving me out of meetings, didn't complete what the like plan would be for my vertical within the team. So presented like a map where everyone else's positions were lined up and mine was literally just like a question mark on this infographic. And I was like, you know what? This isn't for me.
So that's a crazy experience, and I'm sorry you had to go through that. What I am wondering is how, in the midst of this, you kept yourself sane. What are the things that you did or wish you did to not feel pain? Because I'm, you know, you haven't talked to me about the feelings, but like seeing that question mark next to your name, looking in two rooms and being like, but I should have been invited. So that's the what of what happened. But the emotions and feelings are sometimes the things that could destroy us. So like, how, you know, what were you feeling and how did you cope?
I think that I was feeling horrible and I felt ways that I had not felt in years. Cause I was like, at this point in my career, I had been to therapy. I had done the things. I was feeling like in a probably the best place with my mental health that I had ever felt when this started to happen. And suddenly interactions with her made me feel like I was 18 again. And I just, it was bringing up so much trauma and I had this awareness of it. So really what I did to get through that, at first I would try to talk to some of my coworkers and kind of, you know, get them to kind of either validate what I was saying or like help give me information that I was excluded from. And then it became, okay, what I'm doing is I'm going to check out. I'm so hard for me to do the bare minimum, but I'm going to do the bare minimum. I'm going to work the minimum number of hours I possibly can. I am not putting anything forward and I'm setting very strict boundaries with everyone. Cause I was someone where anytime anything needed to get done, let's go to Clara. I wore like 16 hats in that job and I was fine with that if I felt like I was valued, but it was very clear that I wasn't being. So suddenly it was like, oh, you want something from me? Here's a Google form where I need you to fill out what exactly it is you want. Tell me what your priority is. What's your time frame? How many hours are you willing to commit to this project? And what's your scheduling look like? And when you put that in writing, then come to me and then we'll work it out. And like, those were kind of some of the practical, like, you know, when I'm having to actually be in office. But outside of that, I really shut down. I got to the point where I would log off a Zoom meeting for the day and lay across my bed horizontally for 6 hours, scrolling TikTok. It was bad. It was really bad. And I kind of was having this discussion back and forth on TikTok with people about like, I feel like I need to leave. I don't feel like financially I can leave. How do I navigate this? Because I can't risk my mental health to the extent that I was. I was like, I am in such a bad place where my safety is being compromised by this person and by this workplace. And it's a shame because it really was mostly one person causing this. And, you know, that's kind of where I came to the place of like, I know I'm going to quit. It's just a matter of picking the time frame out. And basically what they ended up doing was, as part of the restructure, they converted my role from a salaried role back to an hourly role, gave me 30 days notice, which meant losing like perks and stuff, and also meant having to go back to like using a punch clock. I told them outright, that doesn't work for me. I'm not doing that. You have until the end of the month to work something out or I'm leaving. And they didn't work it out. I put in my notice, got paid out my PTO, and I felt a calm I don't think I had ever felt. It was immediate. I didn't regret the decision. I didn't feel stressed about it, just calm. And it was so funny because when I quit this job, I had posted it on TikTok and I got something like 700,000 views, people watching me quit this job. And I eventually just had to put it on private because some weird clickbaity site wrote an article about it and it was getting spread way outside of TikTok in a way that crossed a lot of boundaries for me. But I literally quit my job in front of almost a million people.
That's incredible. I need to see this video.
Maybe I'll share it with you. I think I still have it. Like, I have it set to private. So TikTok will let you not delete something, but you can make it where no one can see it anymore. But a lot of the comments that people were saying, I got a fair share of negative ones from boomers, but I also got a lot of people saying, good for you. And that really helped. And I had a lot of friends who were really supportive and they were like, we're going to help you get through whatever this is. I don't think any of them expected it to be 6.5 months. They're all just mind boggled that I still haven't found a job, but I've really had a strong network of people just around me supporting me and trying to find connections and like buying me a cup of coffee. And that has been tremendous in that sense.
And as somebody who has been a follower of yours on Twitter for a long time, your transparency is inspiring. The fact that you're sharing alone is something that I think is motivating a lot of people who are in situations that are similar, either looking for a job or like on the cusp of leaving one. But going back to this manager, one of the things that I wonder if this person ever got was feedback. And I'm curious if they had the awareness that some of the words that they were using that maybe have been coming from a place, because a lot of the stuff that we say comes from an internal place. Like, I'm not thinking about you, although I do, or I try to do. I'm feeling a thing. I'm aggravated. I had an awful time getting the kids out of the door this morning. There's something behind it. But we learn as leaders to temper that, to really ask ourselves to take a beat and ask the question, is this going to be helpful to the person moving towards some goal that we all share? And so sounds like this person, in addition to being new and stressed out, like hadn't had feedback come or coaching. But I am curious about whether or not if given the opportunity, you feel like you would have the tools to be able to help this person understand what was wrong about what they said. So
I tried.
You did.
Honestly, I actually haven't thought about this conversation in months, but yeah. So we had a series of conversations. And one of them, basically, we had our director who was above both of us, but I had been working with the director for 3 years, really always enjoyed working with her. So we had a good rapport. And so she was kind of just in the background of this call watching it unfold. And I really went to her and I said, this is how you are talking to me. This is how it's coming across on my end. This is how I'm receiving it. Here are a series of better ways to communicate with me. Does this make sense? How can I respond to you? Those are kind of the things I was giving on my end. And what I was getting back is, you're being disrespectful. This is disrespectful to me. And I'm like, I'm literally just telling you how I am feeling and perceiving and how is a better way to try to communicate what it is that I need, how we can kind of, that whole team had communication problems. So I'm sitting here earnestly on this call saying, here's how I feel like we can address this communication gap. What do you need? How can we fix this? And really asking to make sure she was understanding my points, trying to be really open in this dialogue. And I was just getting back, you're being disrespectful. You need to watch your tone, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you're talking to me like I'm a preschooler. And I didn't say that on the call, but I came to a point where I even told someone in HR, I was like, if she tells me to change my tone one more time, I will walk out, because that is so beyond triggering. Like, on so many ways, especially as someone who is like a neurodivergent person in the workplace, someone who is from the South working with all these California people, it just can be a very triggering thing when someone's talking to you about your tone, especially when you know that your tone isn't any different than how I'm talking right now. I don't have some kind of ridiculous tone. I'm just having an open conversation with you. And anytime you tried to be open with her, she would take it as a personal affront. Like, have you ever had an interaction with someone who doesn't accept criticism well? And so they just take everything as an offense. And that's really what it was with her. And even when she would try to give me feedback, I would say, cool, I can accept that. But here's context that you don't have, because you haven't been here for 3 years. So you're listening to someone that's telling you something false. And then when I'm trying to tell you what she's saying is false, and here's all of the paper trail of evidence of that, you're saying, oh, well, now you can't take criticism. I'm like, no, I can, but I also need you to understand that there is facts involved in a situation. And so, you know, that's kind of another thing that would come up with her. She would say, well, so-and-so doesn't know how to do X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, I trained them on this date. Here is where they signed off on it. Here is where they did it correctly. And I have this documented for her. So it's not me who didn't train her. There's another issue here. Let's figure it out what it is and resolve it. But she would be like, oh, well, you're not doing your job. And I'm like, but I am. But there's other things here. And she would never look at me as someone who had expertise in this area. I'm like, I have a whole ass industrial and organizational psychology degree. I do know what I'm talking about. But she would look at me like, oh, it's just you. You don't know what you're doing. That's why she doesn't understand something. I'm like, no, it's just a learning thing. And there's going to be regression. And that's just part of it. And some of it is someone has to be willing to want to learn new things. And sometimes that's not where someone's at in this particular moment. And those need to be part of a conversation. But no, she wouldn't hear any of it.
it's, I'm so sorry. And it's not my intention to bring up old feelings. The thing that I'm fascinated by is how universal what you're saying is. And there are things inside of your story that resonate. One, communication opportunities, and then the other is a lack of curiosity. And both of those things, curiosity and communication, when they're not there, can start wars, right? Mm-hmm. Like literally, it's the foundation of, it's a cracked foundation that leads to separation in relationships, to parents and kids not being able to like communicate, to siblings. It literally, those are the small ones, but you know, they're huge ones too that can start wars. And I don't know if I have the answer, and I'm always on this journey, but we can only control what we can control. We can't make other people different, and we can't make other people change. So this idea of trying to make somebody who's not naturally curious is where I'm going to wrap things up. Like, if you were to speak to the managers of many listening to this podcast who themselves are under pressure to deliver, perhaps don't have this natural curiosity, help me understand like a little bit about you, Clara. Like, where did you come from? How would you like to be communicated with? What does it look like to have a healthy relationship? So you don't have that conversation because that's not a way that they're showing up. But how do you like suggest it in a way that isn't threatening, is respectful? Let's just brainstorm together. But I'm curious to get your thoughts. Like, how would you, in your new job, your new next job, try to clear the space to have a conversation that says curiosity is really important at the beginning of a relationship, in the middle of a project, at the end of a project with your manager?
I think it has to come to a place of choose empathy over ego. That's, if we were to just put it in buzzwords, that's what it is. Because anytime I've had communication issues that aren't being addressed over a long term, it's always because one of the parties isn't willing to set aside their perception, their feelings about something, and hear the other person out, and then try to reach a solution. They just want to be right, right? It's ego over empathy. And if we're ever going to address this person, like, one, it is addressing lack of curiosity. I'm an aggressively curious person, so I don't mind. Like, I want to hear how you're experiencing things. But not everyone comes to the table with that. Not everyone. Again, I think it comes down to what we were talking about at the start, is like individualism versus collectivism. I think there, that strong individualistic streak we have in this country really causes people to prioritize their experience over everything else that's happening. And, you know, in the workplace, in a managerial context, that means that what they say goes, what they think is right. And that's not always the case. Just because you have a bigger title doesn't necessarily mean that your experience is the more important one in the conversation. I think if anything, as a manager, when you're talking to people who are reporting to you, you should be the one setting aside kind of your feelings in that situation and hearing the other person out. That's part of the role of the manager. And if you aren't able to do that, perhaps management isn't the right track for you. And that's a conversation we need to be having, because we have all of the wrong kinds of people in management, and people aren't happy in it because they don't enjoy having these kind of interpersonal conflicts. That's not their strength, navigating through that. They don't need to be in management. But we've told people that in order to promote up and grow your career, you have to go down this management path. And that's just not fair, because that's not the skill set all humans have or want to have or need to have in order to be kind of considered as like growing in your career. But that's just, that's what capitalism tells us, right? That there is this kind of one path up. And it's like, unless you have people that you're in charge of, you're not growing as a person. And that doesn't jive with me.
Ooh, let's dismantle that concept. Again, more podcast episodes. But to bring it back to the human who is feeling the pain, we sort of talked a little bit about the manager. For those young folks who are listening in and struggling with a manager who isn't seeing them, valuing their expertise, their feelings, and speaking to them in ways that are demeaning, condescending, and really lacking a bunch of curiosity, but they don't actually have any way of leaving. They're on a visa, you know, they really are bringing in money for the family, whatever. Like, what advice might you offer to them so that they don't lose themselves in all of this pain?
I think that's such a hard question, because I've definitely been in that position where I couldn't leave before too. And then I feel like all advice people give just sounds ridiculous, but I think it is a reshuffling of your priorities and understanding that if you can't show up as your full self at work, you have to put up these boundaries maybe to protect yourself from some of that treatment. And maybe that's taking a step back in a meeting and just not participating to the fullest extent. And I hate to tell people to do that, but sometimes that's what you have to do to survive these spaces, to keep yourself employed so that you don't say something that gets you unemployed, you know? And you just have to say, okay, if I'm not showing up as my full self here, I'm not giving this energy here. Well, suddenly I have that energy to do other things with. I have that energy to spend time with my family or to create something in my private life that gives me fulfillment, or to write something or to, you know, really invest in my friendships, right? Everything is a season and we have different chapters. And sometimes when you're in a really bad place in one part of your life that you don't have control over, you just, you know, you have to kind of start investing in the aspects that you do have control over. And hopefully that gives you some mental fortitude to get through the part that you don't have control over until you're in a position that you can, right?
And that's that. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation between Clara and I. I just want to thank her for her time and also put a little plug in. Clara's currently looking for her next learning and development role, so feel free to hit her up. If you are interested, you can find her details in the notes for today's show. And thank you, as always. This is something that I haven't done before, to my partner, Dan Sachs, for his editing help on today's episode and all of the episodes.